on ABC Sunshine Coast. Rob and Annie with you, 1300 903 222. Have you ever eaten dog meat yourself, Rob?
Well, it just sickens me to think about it. I did that story about the Yulin dog meat festival that they do in China, and I could barely get through the interview. I was just, my stomach was churning so much just hearing about it.
If you want to give us a call on this issue, do you think it's fair enough to consider the export of our dingoes as a meat product and other products to Southeast Asia, where, of course, in some parts, it's considered a delicacy, dog meat, and very much a part of their cultural cuisine. 1300 903 222. Now, that's not the case here in Australia, of course. However, a dingo researcher, Dr. Ben Allen, will present a discussion about whether we could sustainably harvest dingo meat for export to Southeast Asia at a seminar to be held in Brisbane later next month. It's called Sustainable Use of Wildlife Conference. Dr. Allen's told me he's not ready to talk to the media about his idea yet, but will be available closer to the conference, Rob. But since words got out about his seminar topic, it's been met with horror by dingo conservationists, including Dr. Ernest Healy, who's the Secretary of the National Dingo Preservation and Recovery Program. We spoke earlier this morning, and I asked Dr. Healy what his group believed were the major issues with the use of dingo meat for export.
Our objection really has two aspects to it. One is a general one. Over time, governments, in relation to their environmental policy, have become ever more committed to the commercialisation of our relationship to the natural environment, of finding ever more ways of deriving commercial benefit from nature, rather than seeing nature as having intrinsic value, increasing that to be protected in its own right because of its own intrinsic value. Increasingly, we are being told that the protection of nature really stems from our ability to derive some sort of commercial benefit from it. So that's the broad context. There's definitely a drift in conservation policy in that direction. I think the problem with Ben Allen's proposed session specifically is that it's an extreme point of view. Once extreme points of view like that are tabled, put on the table for serious discussion, then a whole lot of other proposals for the exploitation of nature then begin to appear more moderate and more acceptable. So although the idea of harvesting dingo meat for sale to Asia, you know, might seem extreme, and I don't really see how it would get up practically, the simple discussion of it and the suggestion that even though impractical, it may be somehow ethically acceptable, it shifts the boundaries of the discussion more to the extreme.
Dr. Healy, my understanding is that apart from Fraser Island, there are only a couple of pockets of what you would call purebred dingoes on the Australian mainland anyway. So do you think Dr. Allen could be talking about what I would term wild dogs, where dingoes have bred over a long period of time with domestic animals, and, you know, we have this wild dog problem? I guess some people might say, well, the harvesting of wild dog meat could be the answer to that problem for farmers.
Yes, well, my organisation wouldn't accept that distinction in the first instance between dingoes on the one hand and wild dogs on the other. What we've got is a sort of an admixture of pure dingoes and animals that we consider dingoes, what we might call the modern dingo, that has undergone some sort of interbreeding with domestic dogs incrementally over a very long time and evolving and constantly adapting to the Australian environment all along the way. What we have is a unique and distinctive animal there that is still predominantly dingo in its genetic makeup and uniquely adapted to the Australian environment. It looks like the ancestral pre-European dingo in most cases and behaves in the same way for the most part. So we really see this distinction between dingo and wild dogs, if you like, as really a form of ideology to justify the continued persecution of dingoes because they pose a threat to mainly the sheep industry.
To play devil's advocate, though, I mean, what about the fact that, you know, in North Queensland, for instance, and in the Northern Territory, we sustainably harvest crocodile meat and eggs from the wild crocodile population for industries like clothing and shoe manufacture?
That's an instance, you know, that's a case in point, if you like, of the more general objection that we have to the line of argument being pursued at this conference, and in particular by Ben Allen. What's at risk here is a shift from a policy orientation that sees the natural world and the taxa, the species, really only has a right to exist so long as humans can derive some sort of material or commercial benefit from it.
I want to get a comment from you, if I can, too, about the case on Pelorus Island. We recently hear that the government is planning on introducing dingoes to that North Queensland island where there's a wild goat problem, get the dingoes, which have been neutered, to cull the goats. Apparently very difficult for them to do it in any other way because of the inaccessible nature of the vegetation on that island. And yet I also understand that these particular animals could have a 1080 kind of pellet that's been inserted under their skin, which means that in a couple of years' time, these animals would be poisoned and die anyway. What can you tell me about that case and your organisation's thoughts on this?
Well, our view of it is that we, although some would disagree with us, we don't have a problem as such with the idea of culling introduced exotic pest animals, including goats. They are very environmentally destructive. We have no argument at all against the idea that this population of goats on this island is, you know, very environmentally detrimental. Our problem is with the way that the dingoes are being really quite callously used, with an implanted, if you like, toxic capsule under their skin, timed to go off in roughly 2 years' time, I believe, full of 1080 poison. Now, 1080 poison is widely considered to be, it's really a super toxin. There's no antidote to that poison, and it's considered to result in a prolonged and painful death for animals that die through ingesting that. Now, how the proposal to put dingoes onto that island to kill the, you know, cut back, cull back, or kill the goat population while having this poison capsule embedded within them ever got past any animal research ethics approval process is just beyond me. It's extremely inhumane way to die, and it's just really treating the idea of killing pests with another pest. Well, our position, of course, is that the dingo is not a pest. It's a native animal and plays a very important role in ecosystems within Australia. So to simply callously treat the dingo in this instance is something that is completely expendable.
I have seen a petition doing the rounds that is calling on the University of Queensland, which is hosting the Sustainable Use of Wildlife Conference in Brisbane next month, for Ben Allen's seminar on dingo meat and the possible exportation of it to Southeast Asia, for that seminar to be pulled. Do you think his talk should be pulled?
I do. Our organisation agrees with that. We think the focus of the title of that particular session is, I think, deliberately inflammatory. In Australia, things vary culturally around the world, but in Australia, the eating of dog meat is illegal. It's considered, culturally, it's considered repugnant and unacceptable.
Dr. Ernest Healy-Robb, who's the Secretary of the National Dingo Preservation and Recovery Program, giving us his thoughts on that idea of harvesting sustainably dingo meat for export.
I think the use of the word dingo is interesting to me. Like, why wouldn't they call it wild dog? You know,
well,
pest dog or something, you know?
I guess the thought there, as Ernest Healy said, is that the two are almost, you can't distinguish between the two, according to him. He would say that, you know, the dingo, you can see the dingo in these wild dogs that they've been interbreeding for many, many years, so that they are essentially dogs at the same time as being, yes, wild dogs, and maybe not the purest type of dingo, but in their mind, you know, these are dogs and they're considered an apex predator in the same way that we preserve white shark, you know, great whites in the ocean as an apex predator, and we understand the importance of the work there in the environmental system. You know, we have a very different view of the dingo, though, don't we?
Well, I'm also not convinced that there is too much of a market as well in Asia for this kind of thing. I mean, the expert I talked to about dog consumption in Asia was very sketchy on the numbers of people that are eating dog. It seems to be sort of something that old men, very few old men still do, as a hang-up from previous generations.
Okay.
So, you know, interesting to see if that talk goes ahead and what is said.
I'll be interested to see if the University of Queensland pulls the talk.
12 to 9, 1300 903 222, here at the ABC.
You're listening to ABC Sunshine Coast.
Red awareness of them, particularly around Fraser Island and some of those places. But then you think, alternatively, as we said,
the
pest dog issue and the sheep farmers and whatever else. Mm-hmm. Shane has said, by far the largest population of a single mammal on the planet are humans. 80% of all other mammals are now domestic livestock. I think we should be having a talk about sustainable use of people. Stuart says, are you bloody kidding? Really, have you all lost your minds? What is sustainable about killing wildlife? You have to be joking or just a plain moron. Wake up to yourself. And Anna, you pointed out, interestingly, that this conservation through sustainable use of wildlife conference, which is being held by the University of Queensland on the 30th of August through until September, early September, just a couple of days. One of the major sponsors is the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia.
Yeah, and I guess, look, our earlier caller, you know, Rob from Budrum, clearly had an interest in, potential harvesting of wild meat like deer, which are a problem here on the coast, and I know many a sporting shooter who does that, and they go out and eat the venison that they actually shoot. So, you know, I can see both sides of the story, but we are talking about dogs here, which I do have a problem with. I wouldn't eat dog personally, but we're not talking, it's illegal to do that here in Australia. We're talking about the export of the dog meat.
1300 903 222. Join in.
You're listening to ABC Sunshine Coast.
About sports shooting or exporting meat with dogs, they should be looking at the feral cat population as well, because that causes a lot more damage to Australian wildlife than the dogs. And that, Aboriginal people have been catching and eating cats out west for a while now, so can't see why you can't include the cats with the dogs.
Maybe he's an entree, Mark.
Feeling a little queasy, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah, good of you to bring it up. It is true, though. They have. I remember doing a story about a special application you meant to get if you spot a feral cat, because there's a federal government funding program to try and work out where they are so they can try and reduce their numbers and stop the killing of wildlife. Yeah.
It's basically wiped out the Tasmanian devil and the thylacine from all of Australia except for Tasmania.
Except for the fact that it's been here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
3,000 years.
That's three. I said thousands and thousands and thousands.
Are you suggesting it's not as native as other species? Is that what you're suggesting?
Of course, yeah. It's not native. It came from India originally and then through Indonesia and down to Australia. So it's not an Australian animal that was meant to be here. A bit,
but it is now considered a native animal to Australia.
Yeah, but it does a lot of damage as well to our native animals.
Yeah, but it is also plays that apex predator role, as we were discussing, you know, the same with the great white shark. The dingo on the land is the apex predator.
Well, it is, because it wiped out the thylacine and the devil from the mainland of Australia.
Well, so you say.
No, that's a fact, Annie.
Or is it people that did that?
No, it wasn't people. The
thylacine was hunted to extinction by people as well.
Well, yes, but only after the dingo already had it on the run.
Okay, but they're all theories of yours.
They're not theories of mine. That's a fact. That's how it went down. So you can check that in any scientific journal that you like.
All right, I'll have a look. But in the meantime, you're saying a pest species, so it's okay to use them for meat to export to Asia?
Definitely, yeah.
All right, you happy with that idea? Would you eat dingo meat yourself?
No, I don't usually eat anything that eats other things, so maybe, I don't know how that would taste, so I don't like pig either, so I probably wouldn't.
You're a vegetarian?
No, I'm not a vegetarian. I just usually eat herbivore grazing, so
I see, cow, yeah,
sheep.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't know how that would taste, so I don't think I'd like that either.
Very Steve, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Toodle.
Nice perspective. There you go.
Oh, that big thumb of yours, because you don't have two of them. You've just got one big thumb today. If you want to check it out, facebook.com/ABC Sunshine Coast for Rob's big thumb today.
Because my understanding of the dingo coming to Australia, was this when the land was unconnected?
Yes, that's right,
Gondwana land or something.
Yeah, Pangaea.
And it just walked through, and then they split up and went and left it.
But has it this incredibly long? I mean, Steve's saying 3,000 years. I reckon the dingo goes back further than that on the mainland with Aboriginal people, and maybe they're the better ones to tell us how long the association's been. I could be wrong, but...
Thoroughly interesting debate between you two there.
Oh, look, you know, I'll debate anyone, as you know. I just think, yeah, it's... I took the greater point from Dr. Ernest Healy, who said, let's have a think about this idea that we are saying that nature has no intrinsic value to us as humans, just for itself, if we can't get a commercial benefit from it. So if we can't commercially benefit from anything in our environment, whether that's a plant or an animal, then, you know, we kind of think, well, come on, you have to work a little bit harder to pay your way in this world. And yet we don't perceive ourselves in the same light, do we?